This is a special meeting of the finance meeting, the finance committee. It's a special meeting because pretty much simply because we changed the time. And we will call the meeting to order and move to item two, which is to consider a finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health or safety of attendees. And the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to government code 54953. Now have that memorized. We can move to item three, which is comments from the public. You can comment now, or, you know, the way we're going to do this, I think you can comment as we go along too. So are there any opening comments, Amelia, or?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that Marty agrees to have the meeting via
telephone. Oh, yeah, that's right. Marty, are you okay with item two?
I concur.
We're good.
Perfect. I have no hands raised.
Okay. So we can move to item four, which is monthly updates. Paula?
Paula just sent me a message that her laptop just shut down. So I told her to come into my office.
Okay.
Me. They had trouble on the improvement committee too.
Okay, there we go.
Paula,
I decided to pop in on my computer and it shut it down. So, but I'm back up. I'm good to go.
Okay, we're on item four. It's your finance monthly updates.
Okay, perfect. So current finance reporting. So there's a couple of things going on here. We have Susan Renner, our interim retired annuitant. She's working in the accounting manager role, and she is working with the new accounting services team from Ida Bailey, and they're here this week working on cleaning up our 2021 audit numbers and getting us prepared to start the fiscal year 22 audit once the year closes June 30th. For assisting us with, you know, obviously just a home later down the road, but they will be also helping us with cleanup to make sure that we have absolute clean financial numbers moving forward to the Tyler Encode system. So one of the things with the Prop 218 protest campaign that we might use the Ida Bailey team to assist us with budget, but that will be a conversation later on down the road. We have to introduce that. So staff and the directors are aware that that might be coming down the road. Moving on to the Tyler team, they have all of the information that they need. So now they are working on assigning this project management team. The intent will be to start the beginning stages of phase one for development and training. And that is set to start in July. Our recruitment, we put two positions on hold for the accounting manager and accountant. This is due to the accounting outsourcing that we've done. The accounting technician position is still open. We do expect to recruit for this crucial position. This person pays our bills, and we need to have a full-time person on board very soon. And utility water billing shutoffs. So we are working on these. These are 90 days past due, and there will be a few residents that are eligible for water shutoffs. We're working with utility staff to ensure that we don't shut people off on a weekend. We want to give them the ability to come in during the week. So we're working with them to contact the residents. The ones that we have identified as being shut off for non-payment have ignored phone calls, have ignored letters, not paid their bills. So we've done extensive outreach to try and work with them, and we've chosen not to. So we'll have more information probably for the board, the June 15th board meeting, on how many of those residents will be eligible for the water shutoffs. So the Prop 218, this is going to be probably discussed a little bit in more detail for the next item, but we do have about probably over 2,000 letters that we're currently updating. And so because these numbers aren't in here, we don't have the total amount validated, we don't have the total counted, and we don't have total number of rejected and duplicates, but there are significant numbers in both of those files. So with that, I'm going to close my finance report and open that up to any questions.
Am I muted?
No.
Oh, okay. So essentially we're rolling into item five, right, Paula? Is that what
you... Yes, that's correct.
Okay, well, let's just say we're on item five for...
And I do have one hand raised that she's going to say that Paula is garbled. And I don't know what to do to make you less garbled, Paula.
The one number that garbled for me is probably the same number they might want, but you can, and the number I didn't get was the first number, the total number of letters that we are now dealing with. Paula, you want to just repeat that number again?
It's over 2,000.
Okay. And do we have any kind of a preliminary number of what we have taken out of that number that represented duplicates or problems?
We probably have about 300 to 400 duplicates.
Okay. So why don't you take the question, Amelia, now, because I had trouble hearing that first part myself.
Okay, Gail has lowered her hand, so I have to assume, because she also sent me a message, that's what her...
That was obviously her question. Okay.
Yeah. So speak clearly, Paula.
Okay. So we're back to you again on item five.
So item five. So basically, we're right now, we have a number logged that that have been validated. So we believe that they would probably reach the 1380. We don't have that total validated yet. There's several, there's two different processes that we're working through. We had the first round of the staff that were going through and validating the account number, the addresses on file, the account information, and then we're also logging them into the GIS system once they've been validated. And so just to make sure that we don't have any mistakes, we have a second set of staff who are going through the validated pile, verifying the account number, the person on file, the account information, the address, and so on, and then ensuring that is also logged in correctly. You know, so there have been some adjustments made in some areas. You know, obviously everyone makes mistakes, and so we want to just make sure that we have an accurate representation of the true count for both the validated and counted protest letters, as well as the duplicates. We also have quite a few letters that were in favor of the rate increases that were dropped off as well. So we're including that in separate piles, and once we're done with all of the validation, we're going to go ahead and scan those in a PDF format and then post that on the website. So if residents want to look at the list, then they can do a search by their address. They'll be able to see if theirs was accounted for, how many duplicates we had associated with that address, and so on.
Okay, so just to make sure we have a general understanding going forward between now and the beginning of the fiscal year, which is that officially the 31st of the month?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Yeah, what is we have to have a budget in place. Just using the word budget, going no further than that, there has to be a budget in place the day before
the board has to approve and adopt a budget by June 30th. So we have right. Something to expend July 1.
Okay. So if in fact the final count has determined that the protest has prevailed, we cannot use the budget that we proposed that went out with the 218 notice. Is that a correct statement?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so we would have to, in some way, amend that budget. Is there, in accordance with the protest, is there any specific thing that we need to do to comply with that, the fact that that has prevailed? In other words, and let me make this up, and let me make clear that I'm making it up because I want to understand the process. If we reduce the budget by $10, could we pass that budget? Because in fact, it is changed. Or do we have to, or is the rule that we have to continue with the existing budget because the protest has prevailed? What exactly is the rule?
So I hope that I'll help clear this up. So if a protest campaign essentially overturns the rate increases, we cannot change anything to the rates. So they would be same as current year moving into the next fiscal year. So the revenue assumptions would be the same as they were adopted for the July 1, 2021-22 budget. So what we're currently charging residents is what would be carried over into next fiscal year. Okay. If we do find that not enough of the protest letters have been validated, even if it's only one, then the board can choose to go through with the proposed budget that was in the Prop 218 notices and can reduce it from there. So you would have the ability to take those numbers and then reduce it to a number that might be more palatable to the residents. But that's only if the protest letter number has not been met. So we have two different scenarios here that could happen.
So let's stay with the scenario as it relates to the budget. Let's not for the moment worry about the rates, because I understand pretty clearly, or I want to make clear pretty clearly, that if the protest has prevailed, then the rates will not change. That I understand.
Yes.
So from a budget standpoint, if we look at from a layman's standpoint or from a private world standpoint, if we look at using a budget that combines existing cash and current cash flow based on the rates that are in place, which are essentially last year's rates, we can then discuss approving a budget that is, assume for a moment, pretty much the same, but is supplemented by cash and cash on hand and incoming revenue from rates, correct? I'm still within our rights to have that discussion. So I guess the next thing to suggest would be that we discuss what that budget would be, and then based on whether or not we chose as a board to either increase rates or not increase rates, or not increase rates because we absolutely can't, okay? Mm-hmm. We could then suggest, you know, one of the alternatives. But what I'd like to do is start, and this is up to Marty as well, I'd like to start with the assumption that we are not going to increase rates. Marty, are you with me on that, or do you have another suggestion?
I think we have to, at least for now, have to proceed with that idea.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to do two different things at two different times. So number one then, Paula, I guess we're starting this conversation assuming that the rates are going to continue at the present rate or level. And from there, we have to discuss how we want to get there and what the impact is, both from a rate standpoint and a cash flow standpoint. Mm-hmm. And starting off, if I'm correct, I want to validate this number. If we chose to use existing cash to support enough, to support a budget, that would be a number that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 3.3 million in actual available cash. Is that a good number?
Yes, that's a good number.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to kind of lay out the parameters here. Now we can go from there. I'm going to give it back to you.
So do you want to move on to item number 6 since we've kind of segued into the 2023 budget?
Do you want to go there or do you have some questions first or what?
No, I thought we were there already.
Yes, that's why we're here. Really. That's why we're here. We really could have just bypassed 1 through 5 and just got to 6. Okay, let's go with 6. Here we are.
Okay. So just running some of the preliminary numbers, the rate decrease that we would see for both reserve contributions and actual rates because of the rate adjustments is a revenue loss annually for next year of about $820,000. And so ultimately, what we're going to have to do is take a look at our expenditures and figure out which funds are going to need the most amount of cash to offset the deficit in the revenues. And, you know, that kind of calls into our reserves and some other analysis that needs to be done to ensure that we have those funds available. You know, there could be the possibility of some interfund transfers that may need to happen to assist with some of the deficits. You know, for example, security is one of the ones that, you know, we're already using property taxes to supplement the expenses. And even though the 2% goes through for security, they still have a significant amount of need that isn't being covered by the property tax. So there's going to have to be a lot of analysis into security and their expenditures and try and figure out, you know, what we can cut, what we can't cut, you know, what staffing looks like, and, you know, where, how we can offset some of that deficit. So there's a lot of analysis that needs to be done in a short period of time. And right. So that's just some of the things that we just need to take into consideration on the expenditure side. You know, revenues moving forward, if we're moving forward with no increases, we know that there's about an $820,000 deficit across all of the funds.
Okay, so in back up again to the existing cash on hand. Mm-hmm. If we're using a $3.3 million number, what would in just a normal everyday world, based on our monthly budget, and let's assume the current budget, for example, if you want to do the division, how many months of operating capital does $3.3 million represent?
I believe it's about 3.
Okay. So already, based on the benchmark that we've used, at least in the time that I've been around, we've always said that what we really wanted to have was 6 months worth of operating capital in the bank to meet whatever challenges come up along the way.
Correct.
Okay, so we're below that level at the moment.
Yes.
And I just wanted to bring that up because that's a consideration going forward on how much the board would be in favor of deleting that or depleting that number. You know, I mean, theoretically, you could say we're going to throw $3.3 million at this. That's probably not the smartest thing in the world to do. So, okay, that was just my comment. So go ahead. It's back to you.
Oh, okay. Well, I really don't have too much more that I really can go into detail with. You know, again, I'm still working on the numbers, but you know, it's going to take some significant analysis to go through and figure out what we can cut. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, costs are increasing exponentially. I think one of the numbers that really floored me was energy costs have already increased 32% this fiscal year. And there's no end in sight. I mean, if you look at California, the gas tax alone, we're going to have July 1, another 50-cent increase. So gas out here is almost $7. So you add that 50 cents on top of that, you know, our utility staff, our water operators drive trucks. We have security staff that are patrolling constantly. You know, our fuel costs have gone through the roof. And, you know, those are some of the things that we can try and trim the quote fat where we can, but there's just some things that are unavoidable. And so that's really just a matter of trying to figure out how much of that cash flow we can actually tap into or we're going to need to tap into. And then how do we figure out moving forward in the future that we don't run into this situation again?
So let me just throw something out there to you know, what I want to leave this conversation with is you having, at least from Marty and I at this point, some kind of guideline on where to proceed. And what's in this conversation, what's coming to mind with me as you look at it enterprise by enterprise, if you want to call it that. For example, if you go into the operating budget for water, you know, take away the millions of dollars that are stashed in there for long-term improvements and repairs. I'm trying to think in my head where you get efficiencies in water. I mean, you know, we're not sending water plant operators home. We're not walking to house to make repairs because we don't want to put gas in the tank. I mean, I don't see in water and sewer where there are any kind of realistic opportunities to cut that budget.
Right. I mean, and that's ultimately the hard part about this is because I think and I know that anybody in the water utility realm, you know, I've talked to plenty of the staff there, you know, they've gone without, you know, for so many years because you know, the budget just didn't support giving them the tools and resources they needed. So it's kind of been a compounded problem over decades. And now that we're in this situation, you know, especially with costs increasing, it puts them at even more of a disadvantage because, you know, you can't cut staff, you can't stop services. We still need to provide quality water. We still need the tools and resources so that we can provide that for our residents and continue to provide the you know, the superior customer service that we have been. So it's really going to fall on security. You know, there's some administration costs that we can cut. There's solid waste we would have to pull from that fund balance to offset the increased costs. I mean, with solid waste, we're looking at a 30% increase plus a 27% increase that wasn't accounted for in current year's budget because of the contract timing issue that we had with last year for Prop 218. So there's some things that we just won't be able to cut.
And Paula, this is Tom. Wasn't there a way for us to, wasn't there something about the bulk waste pickups, we being able to save $3 a month off the solid waste bill if we take away the free bulk waste pickups?
Yes, if we completely eliminate the bulk waste pickup for the next year, I believe there's about 600 residents that take advantage of that. And then that would reduce the bill by, I believe it's like $3.05, something around there monthly. But, you know, obviously we wouldn't be charging that to, or we wouldn't be reducing their bill. It would just be reducing the cost onto us. So that would offset some of those increased costs that we would just have to absorb.
And then people would then pay for their bulk waste pickup. I know where I live, I pay for any bulk waste pickup.
Yes. Yes, that would no longer be a free service.
So Marty and John, that you ask us if there's ways that we see that we could save money on the monthly bill today. And Paul's right. It would offset how much the district has to supplement everybody's trash bill each month. But again, it's less expenses each month for solid waste. And at the expense of the folks who do take advantage of the bulk waste program.
I think that's a no-brainer. My personal opinion is that we should not be tapping into the cash. I think we ought to be cutting expenses. And that's a good start.
Okay, so we'll confirm if that's John, is that the direction you want to go as well?
Well, yeah, I'm looking to see, I think first, like Marty's saying, before I was prepared to make a decision on whether I was going to dedicate existing cash to covering the budget, I'd want to know at a maximum what all those cuts that we could make would be. And then, you know, once we have that number, then we can make some kind of a rational decision as to where we want to go. But yeah, I mean, it's the first one. I'm sitting here looking at that. Well, that's nice. And there's 600 people. I mean, what is the actual off the 305? What's the annual savings on that? I don't think we're making tremendous headway here with the $3.05.
90,000.
Yeah, 98,000.
Okay, well, start, but this is kind of a ways to go here. So I guess as part of this moving forward, I guess, you know, what we're looking for is the staff to come together and tell us pretty much line item by line item and fund or water sewer drainage security where the cost reduction opportunities are, and based on that, you know, we make a determination as to what we want to do. Is that where you are, Marty, or do you want to do something else?
No, I think there's got to be a number of places in the budget where we have what I would call discretionary spending, and I think we need to find those. And I think it's certainly possible to do that. We could freeze hiring. We could stop proposing to use sheriffs as we had in the budget. We could stop using consulting services for security. We could reduce maintenance and repairs that are in the budget. We could eliminate temporary positions. We get rid of board stipends. We could do all kinds of things, but we got to go after them and find out where they're at.
So I guess that's the next part of this then is for you to identify both the individual items and the you know, I guess the annual opportunity, the annual savings that each of those generates, and we start there.
Yeah, you know, our primary goal this year was to increase reserves. And if we chose the route of dipping into reserves to supplement the reduced revenue, it's like a backwards move. I think it's incumbent upon us to find some savings.
So as I hear what you guys are saying, to begin with, for solid waste, we remove the bulk pickup. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer.
That's like one ninth of the problem.
Yeah. But
that's a big chunk of the problem. And then as far as freezing positions and not having part-timers do work, we are overwhelmed with work here, especially in the finance side of things and in keeping up with the security needs. I have trouble freezing positions when we are short-staffed and we're unable to keep our obligations because in security, we don't have enough staff to even today provide patrol for all the shifts with COVID, with vacations, with people moving on, people in training. I don't want to entertain freezing positions right now, Director Hull.
I think you should look at it.
Okay, we can look at it. I don't want to make a commitment right now.
There's no reason why we can't provide patrol only to the people who we have on staff. if that means we miss some days, so be it.
Oh, we're missing a number of shifts right now.
Yeah, well, that's where we're at. We have less revenue. So what else would you do except steal from reserves? But I don't think that's the right way to go. We can change our schedule not to have somebody out there every day.
One of the things that before it even enters into the discussion that I want to take off the table is we have just engaged a company to come in here and essentially replace a significant part of our inside accounting. That has to continue. I mean, we've frozen, as I understand it, we've frozen the two positions that are vacant. So we've already done that. But we have challenges in the finance area that relate both to approving an audit, and ultimately to getting our books in a position where we could potentially convert to a new system. I don't care where that money comes from, but I want that accomplished. And, you know, Marty, I need you to comment on that just to make sure where we are.
So when we approved that contract with the consultant accountant, we were told that the fact that we're not going to hire somebody is going to pay for it. So, yeah, I think that's an important thing to keep going because we've got to have our books back in order.
Okay, good. So, well, we're on the same page there. So, you know, what I think the idea of this is to kind of to give them some guidance as to where we are so they can go ahead and figure all this out. But
just know this, Directors Paul and Merchant, the accountant position that we're talking about having frozen, for the time being, we want to bring somebody in part-time to help fill the gap of supporting the auditors, because we don't have anybody at the senior accountant skill level to support the auditors, but we don't know if we need that position in the long run. So we're looking to bring in, you know, someone similar to Susan Wren, who's working 2 days a week for us, to complement our work with the accounting firm to get us to that place where we feel like we're ready to both say our books are clean and to also be prepared to convert to away from the Great Plains system to the Tyler Encode system. So just be aware of that. I mean, making draconian cuts to prevent, you know, cut off your whatever to spite your whatever is not the best of ideas right now, when right now our financial system is in dire need of what we're doing to it right now. But we need time to let those consultants get their stuff together, and we need to support them with qualified accountant at our end on a day-to-day basis. But the manager position is definitely frozen for now.
Paula, this may or may not be a great suggestion, and it may or may not be a suggestion that in the midst of everything we're doing here, what I noticed when I went out and did that competitive analysis of all these districts, there's a big chunk of the water world that does their billing on a 2-month cycle. Is there any opportunity to save money in doing that? And would we be in a position to accommodate that if it in fact was something that would save us any money?
I don't believe that would save us any money at all, actually.
Okay.
You know, we would still have the staff member that would need to field calls. You know, we have, for a small district, we have a lot of activity with our utility billing. So it might slow things down a little bit every other month. But I don't believe that would be any cost savings for us at all.
Okay.
Well, minimal. I mean, of course, we wouldn't have
right.
Postage and stuff.
Yeah. So I guess then we need to target. We have some things we have to do, no matter what we decide to do. We have to read something on the 15th, and then we have to read it again on the 30th. Is that correct?
Prior to the 30th, yes. Yeah.
Something being a budget. Okay.
Yes.
However that comes out, we have to have that ready on the 15th, and then we have to read it, and we have to read it again to satisfy the law, the requirements. And I think before we do that, then we have to, and the 13th is a problem for me, but on the 14th, we probably have to have another finance meeting. I would hope we would, at least in front of that first reading, so we could comb through what we have. And if we're going to make changes to it, then we really have a matter of hours and not days to do that. But I don't think we have any other choice.
Okay, we can get that on the calendar.
Say that again.
I said we can get that on the calendar.
So, Marty, do you have anything to add to that, or?
Let's see. You're talking about a week from today. I don't know.
Well, the two dates are kind of, in terms of legally, the two days are really off the table for discussion. It's things we absolutely have to do. Correct. Is that right, Paula?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you have to pass a budget.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only thing we're discussing here is when we want to meet as a finance committee. You know, I suppose I'm looking here. Hold on. I'm see if I could even possibly do this on the 13th.
Hold it. What day you're talking about?
Well, we have if we want to have a finance meeting in front of the 15th, which is when we have to read the budget. The only two options, I think, at this point would be the 13th and the 14th. And I'm looking even to see what I can do with that. I think the 14th is pretty much it. Does that work for you, Marty?
Yes. Yes.
So why don't we put that on the schedule, Paula and Amelia?
Okay.
Unless there's a better idea.
What time do you want to meet?
We should meet really as early as possible, because that'll at least give you the rest of the day to
work the budget.
To figure out any changes we want to make. How about 8:00? Is that reasonable or unreasonable? Does that work?
Yes.
Works for me.
Marty, okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Special Finance Committee meeting at 8:00 on June 14th, Tuesday.
Right. Okay. What else do we have to do at this point, Tom and Paula?
I think we have your marching orders. Remove the $3 and see what we can do about where else we can find savings. I mean, to be honest, these budgets aren't built to have any fluff. So the rates that we suggested were designed to cover a zero-sum budget. And that is because costs have gone up so much over the past year. So the cuts we're gonna make are gonna, you know, they're gonna have to be pretty significant. And then, do you guys have an idea on how soon you want us to come back with another budget, or do you want the budget we create? Do you want to try and live with it for the entire fiscal year?
Well, I don't think we have to do either of those. I mean, as long as we can start off creating a budget with inside the parameters that we've just discussed. And at some point in time in that process, we have the ability to adjust that. And I want you to correct me if my understanding is incorrect. We have the ability to do that by starting another 218 process. Is that correct?
Yes, we can start a Prop 218 process. My recommendation would be, and Tom and I have discussed this before, to do an actual rate study analysis. So that way we have a lot more information moving forward with our rates. And that way we do a 3-5 year plan. So that way we don't run into issues later on down the road.
Right, right. And what I would want to go along with that, and keep in mind, you know, we can pull the trigger on, I have no idea when we would pull the trigger on that, if at all. Okay. But it is there. It is a tool, and we're aware of the fact that it's there. You know, there's all kinds of stuff with analysis on operating and on reserves as well, that we could begin discussions on and begin to refine. But, you know, on an interim, then we just go with this and we see how we do. What you guys, I think, really have to do in this next week is sit with Kelly and sit with Michael and see where, you know, these opportunities are. And then we'll plug all that back in and talk about it on the morning of the 13th and the morning of the 14th and have something ready for the board on the 15th.
Can the board approve the ordinance? Assuming the protest is successful, can't the board on the 15th approve the ordinance for the rates?
I don't know. Can we waive a, is there a way we waive a reading, Paula or Tom, and go and do it all in one fell swoop?
It's my understanding, we can check with legal, it's my understanding there has to be two readings of the budget and they have to be 10 days apart. As far as the rates go, assuming the Prop 218 protest is successful, we can't change the rates that are known as fees, which is water, sewer, and solid waste. We've already done one ordinance reading or changed the ordinance for security and drainage because it's a tax, it's a special tax. So what we end up doing, Martin, is the rates just stay as they are because the ordinance on file for the district is what the current rates are. So we just leave those the same.
Okay.
And they stay the same until another Prop 218 process goes through another process whereby we suggest increases in the fees to meet the budget demands.
So based on the reading on security tax and the drainage tax, at what point then, if on the 15th we read that again, can we go ahead at that point and approve at that point for both of those budgets, both of those taxes? Those would be the 2% increases. Okay, so that obviously is the target for those. I mean, we will go ahead and collect those 2% increases in the tax for security and drainage, you know, and those that's independent of the analysis we're doing on the three major funds.
Correct.
So, okay.
Now, if again, I think Paul's talked about this already, but if the Prop 218 notice for some reason doesn't pass, you still have the option of going forward with the proposed rate increases. With you can go in and you can reduce things at the same time. But
what's your target for sending out the totals for the Prop 218 this week?
Yes, definitely this week, probably within the next couple of days. I would say we're probably about a third of the way through the second round of validation. So.
Okay.
So that becomes at the point we have the meeting on the 14th of the committee. I mean, it is within the realm of if the protests were not to prevail, there would be the availability on a reduced basis of some increase in rates to offset what we're looking at that you have come up with between now and then. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, a lot of it hinges on what the final outcome of the protest is, but I mean, one is simply obeying the law and the other is considering maybe another option, but let's wait to see how the count turns out. So are we good? We're not good, but are we done?
I think as done as we can be for today.
Marty?
Yeah. I don't know what else we can do.
Yeah. Okay. So we're, you know, we're leaving here clear, I think, on what we need to do. And, you know, let's take it one step at a time. Please do what you can to get finished with the count and kind of immediately notify all five of us, if you would, what that looks like. I'd really, and you're doing it anyway, I suspect, I want to know how it all breaks down in terms of what we got that were disputes, what we got that were unclear, what we got that were duplicates, what we got that were valid, you know, just so that we know what the whole picture looks like. It won't change the direction because it is what it is, but it may be a consideration going forward, particularly if it were not to prevail on what the option would be.
And John and Director Paul, I want to be very clear. As I stated at the last board meeting, when our count is completed, we're going to provide a table sorted in address order, like 111 is going to be the first one and 112 will be the second, in a PDF to our webpage. We're also going to scan in and post all the letters and forms that were received. That includes those who sent us documents saying they're in favor of the increases, which I don't know how many of those there are, but the forms that we denied because the person who signed it was not listed on the account, either as a renter or owner, or the address does not exist. And believe it or not, we have a handful of forms that were filled in for addresses that are actually not even in the district. And then also we'll include, it'll be a big file, it'll include all the forms that were validated and approved for the count. So everybody who submitted a form is gonna be able to, or a letter, is gonna be able to go online and prove to themselves that we did in fact count all the letters and the final count is what it is. So I've received one PRA requesting all this information. So rather than post this to one person, I'm gonna post it on the webpage under the tab that Amelia created for the Prop 218 issues. So I just want to be very clear about that. That's what's going to happen.
Okay. Anything further? Any hands, chats? Amelia, anything going on?
No hands, no chats.
Okay. We can move on to staff comments. Number seven. Oh, I'm sorry. Discuss the security special tax initiative.
You know, this might even be more timely than we first anticipated it to be, given that the amount of revenue available to run security is being depleted and we're basically going to have to start scheduling off shifts with no staff because of the money issue. Our consultant, Clifford Moss, put together and this is what they talked about when they talked about doing work with us, a secondary flyer with a poll attached to it that allows people one more time to chime in and talk about what's important to them as far as security, and also allows room for comments. And this flyer, it's a folds in half, it's carbon, it's a little bit heavy material, and it includes a tear-off thing that people can fill out. And you can place it in, you know, the mailbox at the RMA here at the district or at the village, and have your word be heard again, because as we all know, it's been a long time since True North did their survey in January, and a lot has happened since then. So this is kind of a check-in. It's recommended by the by Clifford Moss as part of how they do their business, and they know what they're doing. So this got mailed out. It's apparently being received by every resident in the district within, if not today, tomorrow. And it'll be interesting to see. There's an online component where you can just go in and put in the address. I think you read a QR code or something, or you just go to ranchomiria.com and fill out the survey. That it's a Google survey. It doesn't cost anything for the consultants to use. And, you know, in this case, we're moving forward still. If in fact we do have to make these very unhappy cuts to everything we have discretion with, it will be beneficial to have an option for people to focus on agreeing to pay for additional security, so that's what they can have. And if you recall, Dr. McClerney had determined that the status quo contribution of a total of $170 per year per resident, I think it was 171, would in fact be successful. But again, that was before the gas prices doubled on us and everything else has been going up like mad because of everything else. So anyway, this is just letting you know it's out there. The Security Special Tax Initiative has always been part of the Finance Committee, and this is your update. Questions?
Marty?
Yeah, are we working on what a particular dollar amount might buy us?
Well, right around 180, and of course, these are the numbers that we were looking at back in January before the price of gas went up and everything else, but it doesn't affect security as much as it does regular operations. It's right around 180 would make us whole again, would eliminate the need to supplement security with property taxes. But again, before we actually do this, we will have a very refined picture to look at.
So is there, I'm looking at what they're sending out here, and I see the QR to code, and I'm assuming that the it's built to understand that you can't want twice, you can't answer twice.
Correct. We restrict IP addresses.
Yeah. So what happens then if, when we get a bunch of these that are dropped in the drop boxes or come in the mail, how do we guarantee the integrity that where it's one vote per bill?
It's the best we can do. Okay. We're not doing handwriting analysis, and this is
actually one vote per bill is not the same for that initiative. Everybody who's a registered voter gets to vote.
Correct. But the survey is designed to kind of revalidate the information as Clifford Moss has analyzed the work that Tim McClarney had done as True North's work.
And then there's, you know, there's I'm just looking that, okay, it's important that you tell us which parts of this are the most important to you. And I guess then we pick up the other comments to interpret different kinds of support or non-support for security and what we do. I mean, in the initial poll, there was a considerable number of people who wanted the status quo, and there were even people who wanted to spend less or nothing. So, I mean, is this really designed to just evaluate these bullet points, or is it designed to do more than that?
It's designed to pick up the comments.
Okay.
And so if somebody fills out one by hand and goes on the internet and fills out another one, you know, we can't prevent that. And this is again the direction, the recommendation of our consultant, which is what they think they need to be able to do their job, which is at some point in time let us know if they think an initiative will pass or not. So this is helping them do their job.
Anything else on this item? If not, we will now really move to item 8, director comments and suggestions. Marty, do you have anything?
No, I think we've covered everything.
Say that again, I missed that.
I said I think we've covered everything.
Okay. I don't have anything. Staff, anybody? Any other comments, Amelia, out there? Hands, chats, etc.
Hands.
Okay. With that, I think we can move to adjournment, and we will see you all very shortly.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.